Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Sally O'Courtney, and welcome to Public Advocate. I'm going to pick up John Gilmore of Autism Action Network, and I will remind him of the number to call in. Hold on just a second while I do that, and hopefully he will be calling in. All right. So we are just up a creek for... We've been working on this, John and myself and many others, since before October 23rd, when the hearing for people to speak about mandates for the youngest to receive flu shots to attend daycare through preschool. And on October 23rd, a multitude of people came and spoke. 100% of us were against this. So the people have said no. This has been passed regardless. And John is going to explain something that is totally critical, and you need to tell your neighbors about this because we don't have much time. Hello, John Gilmore of Autism Action Network. I appreciate your calling in.
Hey, Sally. How you doing?
Well, I'd like you to explain to people how these mandates may not actually be mandates and why.
Well, it's a complicated situation. It basically started at the end of 2013, right when Bloomberg was about to leave office, and he put forward a proposal to have a flu shot, an annual flu shot, and a pneumococcus shot, usually called a Prevnar, required for all kids between the ages of 6 months and 59 months who are in preschool, Head Start, daycare, pre-K in the city of New York. And this was a decision put forward to the Board of Health, which is an appointed board, right? And they went for it, right? Now, we believe it's... pretty dubious whether the Board of Health has the power to do this in the first place, but we'll get to
Bravo.
That. Right?
Exactly. That's a big, big point you're making, yes.
Right. Now, the regulation did not go into effect until tomorrow. Tomorrow the kids are supposed to have it. And for the last 6 weeks or so, there's been a lot of confusion about what was exactly going to happen tomorrow if a kid shows up at school without the shots. Now, the city said that they're not going to do anything to the programs that the kids attend, right? But they, for a couple weeks, the Board of Health had one policy. The Board of Education had another policy. We called the mayor's office. It didn't seem like they had any policy at all. And what they finally settled on is that if a kid shows up tomorrow without the shots, they are going to leave it up to the program or school director or principal to decide whether they're going to let the kid in or not. So the city doesn't care one way if a kid is in or not. They took the right to make the decision of what your shots your kid gets away from the parents, and they just sort of willy-nilly at the last minute thrust it onto probably thousands of different program directors around the state, in the city, who have no training, no background, no legal authority to do this, and gave them the decision to decide, the power to decide. It's completely insane. And
and on top of that, I just so that people realize, the CDC has come out stating that the flu shot does not work. Now,
right.
I informed the mayor of that immediately, and I informed the health committee of the New York City Council of that. And the New York City Health Department knows that because they are an arm of the CDC.
Well, the problem with the flu shot, and I don't think this comes as any surprise to anybody at this point, is it's a pretty, even in the best of circumstances, a pretty ineffective shot. It does very little to reduce flu incidents at all. I mean, there's 900 strains of flu out there. The flu shot only includes 3 strains. And quite frequently, they just simply don't have the strain in the shot that matches what's going around That is if you accept that the flu shot works in the first place, right? That's why it's not mandatory anywhere, okay? There's only three places in the United States where the flu shot is mandatory, and only three groups of people it's mandatory for. And that is for kids under the age of 5 years in New Jersey, in Connecticut, and now New York City, and those are only for the kids in daycare and preschool, right? So there's 19 million people in New York, only about 75, 80,000 kids in the city of New York and the entire state are required by law to get a flu shot, right? It's absolutely absurd, right? It gets even more absurd when you consider that if a child gets the inhaled flu vaccine, which is a live virus, you're actually inhaling a live virus. And it says right on the package, it's no secret that if you take that live virus vaccine, you are infectious for 3 weeks after you have it, right? So supposedly the goal is to prevent people from getting exposed to flu, but if you have a known infectious kid because they took the Flumist, they're perfectly okay to go into preschool and daycare and so on. It's just a ridiculous policy. So,
well, it's a potentially very dangerous policy, and I tell you, I have been interviewing parents or family members or close family connections to children who have died or who have been seriously injured by this flu shot for the purpose of educating our political entity here in New York City to educate them so that they would take action to prevent these mandated flu shots. And to my knowledge, there has been no action taken because they are still mandated, although you stress the gray area, and I can't thank you enough for that, where in each school an arbitrary person will be called upon to make the decision whether a child will be allowed into the school or expelled from the school if they don't have it.
Now, one thing I think your listeners need to know, if they are in the group of people who have a child in these programs and they don't want to get them a flu shot, New York law allows for people to get an exemption for vaccine mandates for religious reasons, okay? And you can apply for it, and it's pretty straightforward the way you apply for it. Simply, all you have to do is, if you show up to school tomorrow, bring a letter stating that you have genuine and sincere religious beliefs that make it basically unacceptable for you to give your child vaccines or immunizations, okay? If you give the letter to the school, they have to allow the child to stay for at least 14 days. Okay, that is if the program director understands the state law. And my guess is none of them will have a clue of what the state law is. Okay, but nonetheless, that's what is allowed by Section 2164 of the New York State Public Health Law. Now, again, your readers who might be in this situation should remember that, because if they go up to school tomorrow and the kid can't get in, tell them it's Section 2164 of the Public Health Law.
I just want to tell everybody, scroll down underneath this show to the comment area. Open the link for the show and scroll all the way down to the comment area, and John Gilmore has a note that he has made instructing you exactly what to do. Am I correct? That note that you posted was precisely what you want people to understand?
I think there's enough information there to start the process, okay? Now, one thing your listeners need to know is that in the letter, they must completely avoid any mention of side effects, autism, toxicity, lack of efficacy, anything like that. You must not put in the letter, right? Because if you do, the city of New York will reject the letter and say, oh, you're doing this for secular reasons, right? Not religious reasons. You basically have to stick to the idea that you don't want to do this because God doesn't want you to do it. Yeah, it's simple as that. and don't bring in anything related to anything other than purely spiritual or religious reasons. Right.
Right. You don't even allude to the fact that the CBC says it doesn't work.
No. Don't even mention that.
The CBC, even that fact that they themselves say it doesn't work, that's irrelevant. You stick with spiritual and religious beliefs.
That's right. And once you give them that letter, basically you are in compliance with the law, okay? Because if you're in the process of appealing for an exemption, they have to let you attend, okay, until you get some sort of decision back, right? Now, what will happen if you do apply for a religious exemption? You will get a rejection letter automatically from the city of New York. They reject every application first time around, and they hope you just go away, right? At that point, what you do is you have to appeal it. You don't have to get a lawyer or anything like that, but, you know, you basically have to say that you're entitled to a hearing, and you can appeal the decision, all right? And if anybody finds themselves in that situation, a couple things you can do. There's two advocates out there that I know very well, I've known for a long time, who specialize in assisting people through this religious exemption process. One is a guy by the name of Gary Krasner. You can get his contact information from his website, which is cfic.us, okay, or www.cfic.us. The other person is Rita Palma, and her website is mykidsmychoice.com, all one word, mykidsmychoice.com. And they have a great deal of experience guiding people through this process. They know all the tricks the city uses, because the city will do everything they possibly can to prevent you from getting this exemption. But you can get it, but you got to go about it the right way.
Well, I have, of course, at this juncture, the appropriate question to ask you is there an enforced cap on the number of religious and medical combined exemptions of 1.2%, or is there not a cap?
There is. That, again, that's something that started with the Bloomberg administration. They decided arbitrarily that they are going to limit the number of people out of compliance, and they, for these reasons, for this purpose, they are telling the schools that somebody who has a religious exemption is out of compliance, okay? They are basically, they're putting out these very cleverly worded letters to the schools that completely misrepresents what actually is going on, right? And they're telling the schools that if they do have a, if they go above the quota, which they set at 1.2%, the school itself will be fined like $2,000 for every kid, right? Now, the quota itself is illegal. According to New York state law, you have a right to this exemption, and your exemption must be considered on its own merits. And you can't possibly consider an application on its own merits if the city is enforcing a quota. It's impossible. But one thing we find about the city, particularly in this field, is that they simply make up stuff whenever it's advantageous for them to do so. Right? So they made up this quota. They made up this fine. They basically
made up this mandate.
They made up the mandate, and I guess that's a good point itself. We don't think that the city has the legal authority to put a mandate in the first place. We think this entire thing is illegal. Okay, this was a decision made by an appointed board. Okay, now in New York, as far back as anybody knows, every mandate for a vaccine to go to school has always been passed as a law by the state legislature, signed by the governor, like every other law, right? Except this one, right? And all the mandates affect the entire state, right? Here we have a local government that has seemed to decided to give itself this authority that has always been the sole responsibility of the state, right? Not only was it the city doing it, but it was also an appointed board. We think, and we are looking very, very seriously at launching a lawsuit against the city. We think what the city has done is exactly analogous with what they did in the Big Soda Cup decision. You remember the Big Soda Cup decision last year where the Bloomberg administration and the courts basically overturned it because they said they didn't have the authority to do it. And that's what we think is possible. With the Big Soda Cup decision was made by the Board of Health, exactly the same people who made this shot mandate decision. And the court held, the Court of Appeals, which is the highest court in the state of New York, held that this appointed board was essentially making new laws. And they do not have the authority to make new laws. They can implement existing laws, but they cannot make new law. Not only that, the court said that this law, but the Big Soda Cup decision was arbitrary and capricious because basically it applied to some stores, but not other stores. Some stores were forbidden from having big soda cups. Other stores were allowed to have big soda cups. And the court said, you can't do that. The law has to apply equally to everybody. And we think that is exactly the same thing you have here. You only have 75,000, 80,000 residents of the state of New York out of 19 million are covered by this law. So it's arbitrary and capricious. It is the Board of Health making a law. And to top it all off, we don't think the city itself has the authority to do this anyway. So, it's not for certain that we're going to sue, but we are looking very, very carefully at that.
What about the e-cigarettes? Was that another issue of this nature?
You know, Sally, I really don't know enough about the e-cigarettes to say anything intelligent about it. One issue, though, that is similar is that back in the 80s, you know, some folks may remember this, the Board of Health tried to make it illegal to smoke in public places, like bars and things like that. And that was overturned by the Court of Appeals for the same reason. They said, Board of Health, you're making a new law. You do not have the authority to do that. You know, that had to be done by the city council, which eventually they did, which is why, you know, it's banned in public areas as well. But it's all about the process, who has the legal authority to do this. And we certainly think the Board of Health and the mayor do not have anywhere near the legal authority to do what they're attempting to do.
Well, I have to tell you, of all the issues that Dr. Varma addressed, he addressed all the comments that were made during the hearing on October 23rd. He addressed them on December 11th when the vote was taken. And the one issue that was never addressed was this issue, which is, do they have the authority to do this? I noticed he went point by point through every single issue, and he did not touch that one issue. And also,
that's very interesting.
Right, and no one, I thought that was fascinating. Also, another point that he made that I really made me wonder, because I thought, why are we having a vote at all if this is true? If you recall, on page 8 of the Act, it said any new vaccine, any additional vaccine may be required, which leaves the floodgates open to now 395 additional new vaccines in development. At the time, it was 271. Now it's 395 in development.
Right.
And what he said, if you recall, is, we can do this at any point, anyway. Like, he was fluffing it off as a non-issue that any new vaccine could be required. And yet, here we were voting on an additional vaccine that's required. So that was completely at odds with the situation that was transpiring.
Well, I think you're bringing up a really important point, because basically I think this flu shot thing is just the camel's nose. Okay, I think their goal is to basically make every vaccine that has been approved by the FDA mandatory in the city of New York. I would imagine the next one they're going to require is probably going to be the HPV vaccine. I don't know if you caught this, but a couple of days ago, the Speaker of the City Council of New York, Melissa Mark Beverito, introduced a resolution. Okay, this is sort of just kind of grandstanding, but they introduced a resolution to ask the legislature in up in Albany to pass a law that's been sitting there for about 10 years now that would make it possible for minors of any age to get a vaccine for any sexually transmitted disease without their parents' knowledge or consent. And this is with this would affect children of any age.
At the city level, again, they're trying to do this not at the state, as they have in the past, but at the city level.
Right. Well, what they're doing, they're not trying to make, all this was is, the New York City Council is a pretty powerless entity. I mean, more or less, the mayor of New York is more or less an elected dictator, right? They don't really, the city council is really an afterthought with just about everything, right? And so all this is a resolution telling the legislature in Albany that this is what they want done, okay, which is pretty weak tea. But what it does tell you, though, is it tells you everything about what their values are, right? They'll basically believe anything that the CDC tells them. They have no respect whatsoever for parental rights or the issue of informed consent, and that they think it's a perfectly good idea to have children of any age making medical decisions for themselves, as long as it sort of it fits in with their sort of preconceived ideas about something. So, you know, this is not a good thing. I mean, and I think it tells us that we have to be very, very wary of the current crew we have there, in City Hall.
Right. Oh, yes. But you're saying this is a city council member, not someone who works directly for the mayor, but someone who's elected
on the
city council?
This was introduced by the chair of the city council. The speaker of the city council, Melissa Mark Viverito.
Uh-huh.
So she is like the head of the city, the boss of the city council. So,
I think it is up to her. I mean, she is the person who should have gone out to all the legislators in the city council and said to them,
right,
"It is, you must contact all of your constituents. You must do a mailer to your constituents, letting them know that it, on a school-to-school basis, this mandated flu shot and pneumococcal shot will be enforced or not." It was up to her to reach out to the legislators and tell them to inform their constituents that they may very well not be shut out, even though it's mandated because of this latest decision by, I guess, the health department. You have been very conscientious, John Gilmore of Autism Action Network, in tracking down and tracking how students could attend in light of the fact that it was still called a mandate, because the schools themselves will not be penalized until 2016. So you have spent a lot of time going back and forth trying to get them to take a position. And it was up to that woman right there that you just spoke about to let her legislators know to inform their constituents.
Well, that's simply just it's not consistent with their values, clearly, they see their role as sort of doing whatever the vaccine industry wants them to do. It's very alarming, really, but that's what we're dealing with. But, on top of that, though, This is all happening at the city level, right? This year, our top legislative priority in Albany is to get essentially secular exemption rights here in New York, right? Now, people don't really know this, but basically, in every other state, okay, except for two, which are the two exceptions, are Mississippi and West Virginia and New York, okay? In every state except those three states, the parent has the final say on what injections their kid gets, okay? Some states allow philosophical, secular exemptions. Other allow religious exemptions. Some allow both. But the way it's structured in 47 out of the 50 states, excuse me, is at the end of the day, the parent has the final say on what happens, okay? New York isn't one of those states. If you want to make a decision about your child, you have to go through this whole process that we were talking about earlier about writing a letter, and then you always have the possibility that you may not get the permission. Then what do? Then you're really stuck, right? So what we're going to do is trying to get legislation. We've got a bill in now. It's called it's Assembly Bill A943. It was introduced by Tom Abenanti of Westchester. He has a vaccine as your child. He's probably our biggest ally in this with this issue in Albany. And basically what that would do is get New York schools, get New York City government out of interfering with people's health care decisions for their children and give us the exact same right everybody else has in 47 other states. So you're going to be hearing, I'm sure we should probably talk about that on another show, Patty. Sally, but
I would like to talk about something else because this is something that nobody realizes. People were alert to it a couple of years ago when it happened, and that now nobody's talking about it, but it couldn't be more important in regard to a flu shot. There was a woman by the name of Parker who sued because her child was given the flu shot in school without her wanting it. And she won, but then the health department appealed that, saying that we were still under the pandemic laws of 2009 and that they could get away with it. And then they did. So of all shots to mandate, it is the flu shot, which already has a precedent in New York State for being administered without parental consent and getting away with it. So what do we do about this?
We got to pass this law. We have to pass this law.
Well, okay.
It's as simple as that. You know, we've got to get the local governments and the schools out of the vaccine business, okay? They have no business being there, right? And we have to give the decision to vaccinate or not for children back to the parents, and we're going to have a growing problem with adults as well. There's more and more work situations where employers are making getting certain vaccines a requirement for continued employment, right? And we've got to stop that. I mean, we basically have to establish the right that we have the right to decide mm-hmm. what is injected into our bodies and what is injected into our children's bodies without the interference of political structures, which are run quite frequently by people who have substantial, overwhelming financial ties to the vaccine industry. Okay. Because this isn't about public health. This is all about money, okay? And this is about very, very big money, right? The vaccine industry has gone over the last 15 years from being a $2 billion a year business in the United States to a $26 billion a year business. And how do they do that? By basically using the power of the state to force people to use their products. All right? And this is one of the few areas of the pharmaceutical industry that is growing at a rapid pace, right? So this is really what's coming down to, right? You know, and to sort of show you, just give some reasons why it's all about money. It's the city wants every kid to get a flu shot in preschool and daycare, whereas there's nothing in the medical literature that a flu shot has any positive effect on a kid under two, right? It's never been established anywhere.
Someone sent me an insert to a flu shot that said there is no known benefit for children under four directly on the insert to the flu shot.
That's in some of them as well. And, okay, I was just being conservative. There's very, very little evidence that it does any good for kids under four as well, right? There's none under two, right? So, yeah, you know, and so basically this law applies to kids from the ages of 6 to 59 and 6 to 59 months in age, and there is nothing in the medical literature that really says it has any benefit at all for except the kids in the last 11 months of this time period.
And this year's
that,
flu shot
and that
has
is
no
if you believe they're telling the truth. Excuse me?
Right, and this year's flu shot has no benefit at all.
And this one has no benefit at all. They've already admitted that. Right.
Right.
So
this gave them the most graceful way in creation to bow out of this mandate, and they chose not to.
Right. Right, because it's about basically increasing the power of these various public institutions, and it's also about doing the bidding of the vaccine manufacturers. That's really what it's about, you know. They don't really care about the health of our kids, right? If they would, they'd pay a, you know, more than an iota of attention to the side effects. And the, you know, the dubious epidemiological evidence for the benefit of these things.
Well, something I learned from Cynthia McKinney, who I interviewed when the CDC whistleblower came out linking the MMR vaccine to autism, and what she said, I said to her, since the pharmaceutical companies aren't liable, she hadn't realized that. I said, no, they're not liable for the damage. I said, and the Supreme Court recently upheld that. She said, oh, well, Congress can undo that. Congress can override the Supreme Court on that decision. That's very interesting to me.
I think so, too.
I did not realize that.
Sure. I mean, you know, Congress took this right away from us. Congress could give it back. You know, that was a right that was taken away from us in 1986 with the passage of the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Act.
Can I ask do you know your history this well? Do you know how many doses of vaccines were administered to children in 1986?
I have no idea.
Okay, because now we're up to 74 through the age of 18, and if you're unlucky enough to live in New York City and attend daycare through preschool, then you get the additional mandated flu shot. So annually. So, and the first year they're saying to take two shots. I don't know if you saw that CBS report that was recommending for children 1 year and under. They had it was called Health Impact on CBS. It was a very long commercial for flu shots where they were promoting two for children under 1 year old. And if you didn't care about your children, at least care about grandma and make sure the child is inoculated to protect grandma with two shots for the child, okay? And, of course, promoting it for pregnant women, which there should be is possibly the greatest sin ever committed because of the elevation in pregnancy miscarriages due to the flu shot. And
don't forget the mercury in the flu shots as well. You know.
Say it again.
Well, and also don't forget the huge quantity of mercury that's still in most of the flu shots given in the United States. You know, it's illegal in New York to give a mercury flu shot to a pregnant woman. That's a law we got passed about 10 years ago, and we got similar laws in about 8 other states. But in most of the United States. You know, infants and pregnant women are taking flu shots that have 25 micrograms of mercury in it or more, right?
Now in New York State, it's illegal to give flu shots to pregnant women?
It's illegal to give mercury-containing flu shots to pregnant women.
Mercury-containing flu shots, okay.
Right, okay. Flu shots are one of the few vaccines still on the market that still contain mercury, right? And, you know, 20 years ago, the United States Public Health Service, which is essentially the CDC, said that mercury should come out of flu shots as soon as possible, right? Well, not just flu shots, but all shots as soon as possible, right? And they came up with mercury-free formulations on a whole bunch of other things, but they never came up with a flu shot. So, you know, not a lot of concern really for, you know, just the basics of safety when it comes to these things. You know, mercury in shots has been banned in most of the rest of the rich world for 20 years or more, and we still have it here. We have this 1930s obsolete technology that we're still using in 2015. It's almost 100 years old at this point. And
a couple of months before this mandate was put forward, was proposed by Bloomberg, I still was watching Charlie Rose on the Bloomberg Network. I guess it was a replay from Channel 13. And he was interviewing Bill Gates, and Mayor Bloomberg was on the interview with Bill Gates. During this interview with Charlie Rose and Bill Gates and Bloomberg, Bill thanked Mayor Bloomberg for his largesse, for his large contribution to the Melinda and Bill Gates Foundation.
Right.
I gasped audibly and thought, what is going to happen to the children of New York City in regard to vaccination?
Not good things.
Because, right. So within a couple of months, this mandate was then proposed. And also, when Bill de Blasio came into office, of all things that he chose to address first, it was to triple the number of children in preschool.
Right.
That startled me because I thought preschool is offered currently. What's the big drive other than to vaccinate a multitude of children? What's the drive to triple pre-K? I've never heard of a drive to triple pre-K. Why is that even an issue? If you were to give New Yorkers a roster of their concerns, I don't even know if it would make it in the top 100.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I personally was shocked myself that, you know, that was de Blasio's big initiative. I mean, with all the issues the city has, I mean, you know, I think there's some merit to it, don't get me wrong, but I agree with you. I think if you asked 100 New Yorkers what their top issue was, I don't think expanding pre-K would be, you know, one of the most popular ones, to say the least. And you got to wonder, you know, I mean, you know, what the politics are behind that, you know. Who amongst his donor base
changed,
really wants that?
What has changed about preschool? Well, what has changed, glaringly so, is the fact that there are additional mandated vaccines.
Right.
Other than that, annually, not just, you know, annually. It just kind of it seemed to go hand in glove with the mandates and then the tripling of the two children who would receive those mandates. And you have to say to yourself, no mistakes are being made here between Bill Gates thanking Bloomberg for his largesse and de Blasio coming in on Bloomberg's heels and trying to triple 3K. I have giant questions for these people. Now, in terms of Bloomberg calling people, all of us at the hearing spoke out against these mandates. Although he called the people, parents, concerned who are going to live with the injury thereafter, those people, he called them crazy. While he was doing that and donated, I understand, $1 billion to Johns Hopkins to get his name on the door. Peter Doshi, a scientist with Johns Hopkins, came out slamming the flu shots. And I thought, who's crazier here? The parents who are concerned and are going to have to live with and pay for all the injuries that are going to be caused by these vaccines if the children live, because the mortality rate, I was talking to Christina England, she was saying the mortality rate from 2011 just came out, and it was almost 2015. That would be 4 years. If we have to wait for the mortality rate to be reported for 4 years, our toddlers may all be dead who attend these programs.
You've touched on so many issues there, Sally. I think one of the key ones here is just mentioning Bloomberg and Bill Gates.
If we don't mention injury and death, we're not doing our job.
I know that, but I think what we're seeing here is that you're getting, this is a huge problem that affects much more than this. It's just you have a very small group of immensely wealthy people who are more and more and more completely dominating, our legal structures, our legislatures, our laws, to reflect their wishes and desires, and basically keeping, average people completely out of the system. We're having sort of a crisis of democracy here, and I think this is just one of the places where it's reflected, is in this sort of out of control vaccine system we have at the present.
Well, there's one last issue to bring up, and that is when little people die, their parents are looked at as culprits, and the vaccine schedule is never required in such an instance. So knowing that there is no case of shaken baby syndrome in an unvaccinated child or pregnant mother, we have to say, are we trying to fill our prisons? Is there profit in prisons?
Oh, of course.
Because the parents will go to jail. Not the doctor, not the healthcare worker, not the hospital, and not the manufacturer. The prison. The parents will go to jail.
Right. Well, the prison industry is was for the last 30 years one of the fastest growing and most profitable industries in the United States. So, again, kind of illustrative of the same problem we have.
Well, John, I know that you have done such a remarkable job, and Rita Palma of My Kids, My Choice likewise has done a remarkable job. I know I have done a remarkable job. But
you certainly have.
At the end of the day, John is sending a message, and his message is specifically write a letter stating that it is your spiritual and religious belief not to allow vaccines in your children. And tomorrow, if you're going to school, bring a letter with you, and then the process starts, and
right,
you are to seek advice therefrom. You're allowed to stay for 14 days. You're to seek advice therefrom from Gary Krasner of CFIC.us,
right,
and Rita Palma of My Kids, My Choice. com, and
right,
I will put both of those addresses in the comment area. If you open the link to this radio show, you scroll all the way down, you will not only see John's note to parents, but you will also see in that note these addresses, and I will put them separately in another comment as well. I want to thank you, John Gilmore of Autism Action Network, remarkable human being and advocate and activist. Thank you ever so much.
Well, thank you, Sally. Keep up the good work. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me on. Take care.
Okay. Goodbye now.